Hello, everybody.
Hey, Phil.
I hear Tasso. I hear Tony. Who else is here?
Gary.
Yes, sir. This is like, did anybody see the new Avengers movie?
Yeah.
This is like the Guardians came together with the Avengers. That was an intense movie. Who saw it?
I saw it, and it's my son's birthday this weekend, so we're taking his classmates to go see it tomorrow. So you got to see it more than once, I'm sure.
Yeah, there's a lot there. I don't want to be a spoiler for anybody who hasn't seen it, so let's stop talking about it. But it's an intense movie. So here the Avengers meet the Guardians. Everybody's come together, one big happy family, more people signing in. And I think what I would call today's call is a paradigm call. I've seen paradigm shifts throughout my life, throughout my career. And, you know, for many years I've used the term like the fitness industry or the personal training industry. It's not an industry. Honestly, it's not an industry. It's a free-for-all. It's the Wild West. It's not an industry. It really isn't. Now, a lot of dollars are certainly made in fitness, but not in the personal training field. A lot of dollars are made in product sales in the fitness industry. A good amount of money is made in health club membership in the fitness industry. But I have to tell you, the personal training field, while it certainly has matured, and while the certification agencies at some level have grown up, you look around you, and you look for consistency, and you look for excellence, and I'm going to tell you the truth, it's hard to find. It's out there. It's just hard to find. It's not an industry. There are those who rise to the top. But no matter how many different ways I look at it, whether I just analyze it myself in talking to people or whether I look at some standards, the average income among personal trainers appears to be, can anybody guess?
I'm going to say 40 grand.
Yeah, you're in that range. So depending where you look, it's just under or just above 40,000. There was a time it was 19,000. So, you know, clearly it's come a long way. But when you look at the field itself, that means there are personal trainers who are working full-time, earning still $19,000 a year. And, you know, are there some who are making 70 and 75? Yeah. But I think there's this illusion, especially when you look around at the egos and the personalities out there, that, you know, lots of people are making lots of money. And when you really start to look at what trainers charge, I'm shocked to sometimes find it's still around $35 a session, $40 a session. Now, again, you can point out the exceptions, and clearly L.A. is going to drive more money than Pittsburgh. New York is going to drive more money than L.A. But it really hasn't grown anywhere near commensurate with the demand. It really hasn't grown at a level where we can say people are now recognizing the true value of personal trainers. And by the way, I can find numbers much lower than that, again, depending on where you look. So if you look at more open-ended numbers like the surveys that Entrepreneur Magazine does, they're very much lower than the ones that are put out by the fitness industry. So, you know, a certification agency is very biased in who they poll. What I can tell you is trainers aren't making the kind of money they deserve. And on the other end of that, there are many trainers who don't even deserve to be making the kind of money they're making. So it's not an industry. There's no true unification. And I see this as opportunity. I do. So I think if anybody here gets caught up within the circle of the industry, and I'm going to come back to this concept of a circle, but if you get caught up within the circle of the industry, meaning the boundaries, then you wind up stuck. So let's just think about geometry for a minute. If you're standing on a point in a circle, a point on the circumference of a circle, and you go to another point on that same circle, and you keep going, around the same circle. So if we think of the fitness field or the personal training field as a circle with limits, with boundaries, with a circumference, that's what people are doing. There's this parade around the circle. Somewhere else, there's another circle that we can call the medical field. I can't call the medical field immature. I mean, the medical field is thousands of years old. And people have reverence and respect for the medical field. Is it imperfect? Oh, yeah, it's imperfect. But we can't even compare them. We can't even put them on an equal playing field. So the circles don't even overlap. They don't even intersect. They are two completely different circles. And I believe the greatest opportunity lies in the space in between. I don't suggest that anybody here pursue moving into the medical field. I know what physical therapists make in the medical field. It's a little pathetic for the work they do. So the medical field doesn't value you. So we can't look and go, well, we're going to make our way there. But the opportunity lies in the space in between. So if you really want to be extraordinary, if you want to step out of the circle, as most of you, of course, have, then I don't want you to look at what is. I want you to look at what can be. And that's an important distinction. Because if you have a client who lives in a city where everybody's fat, just imagine this. You have a client who lives in a city where everybody's fat. And they have pictures of all of these models and bodybuilders. They can't even fathom that that's real life. They can't even imagine that that's real. So they're stuck in what they see. They're stuck in what they look like. They're going around the same circle. So if you try to train them, they're not even going to have the belief that it's possible to change. Now, that's probably a very poor metaphor or analogy. But the concept is, if you're looking at a broken or limited industry and looking for what you can do, you're not going to find it in the circle. What you can do is somewhere outside of that circle. Now, I know people in this group have really gone far outside of the circle, but what that creates very often is just a wider circle. So I'm suggesting now that we reestablish the paradigm. We start to think differently about what is possible for us. We start to think about what is possible for somebody who has literally committed their life to bettering the lives of others using fitness at some level as an intervention. But as soon as you put yourself under the umbrella of the personal trainer, you're in that circle. So I don't have a name for what you guys do. You can call yourself a personal trainer, but your thinking can't be that you're stuck in the personal training industry. So in working to create this paradigm or create some framework for this paradigm, I came up with 7 principles. And these really become very, very powerful in your future if you start to not only know them, but live by them. And I can present it as a list, but it's more than that. It's a thought process. It's changing the way that you think about what you can do in this world. And that's what I'm asking you to do beginning today. Change the way you think about what you can do in this world. The Be Better Platinum Group, we did a very, very, I thought, valuable exercise, and we'll continue it, when we looked at avatars and who are you really, and we identified what Velma's greatest strength could be and what Tony's greatest message can be and what Tasso's greatest strength can be. And we really pulled out some very, very powerful things, and none of them are ordinary. All of them are extraordinary. The challenge becomes, if people just think you're a personal trainer, they never get to see those things. When I start a new Be Better group, one of the early questions is what makes you unique. And for those of you who've been through this, you know what always comes out. I have a passion for fitness. I love helping people. In every Be Better group, first call, what makes you unique? Well, I really care about my clients. If everyone in every Be Better group says that, it's not bad. It's just not unique. So when we really start to drill it down and say what makes you unique and you identify it, man, there is your advantage. But you've got to stop seeing yourself as stuck in this circle. And that's why living by the paradigm with the 7 principles I'm about to outline frees you completely of the circle. Now, what will it take? to allow you to step into this? A great amount of courage. Which means you will feel fear. Because it's easier to be in the circle. It's easier to look around you and go, well, that's what she does and that's what he does. So I want you guys to rely on each other to create a different circle where you literally become the center of your own circumference. Listen, everything in your life you created, now people will deny that until they understand the concept. Somebody decides what college to go to. They go to college, they get a degree. Now they decide they want to get certified. They get certified, they get a job in a health club. And then they decide they're going to get their first client. And then they start training people in their own homes. And then they meet somebody and they fall in love. And then they realize it's not really love, but it's too late because they're living in the same apartment. And then they buy the car they can afford, but they really don't even like the car. And then they get to a place where they go, I'm too busy, I have too many clients, I'm not making enough money, I hate my car, I hate my apartment, I hate the person I'm living with.
Stop talking about me.
What they fail to do in the great majority of cases, because they're human and they are stuck with human nature, is they fail to acknowledge that they created the whole thing. They are the center of the circle. They've created every single thing in that circle. So if you don't acknowledge you created it, what happens is you focus on all the shit around you. Hate this car, hate this apartment, hate this person, hate, hate my clients, hate my schedule, hate 5:30 in the morning, hate. But what are you doing? Where is your RAS going? To all the things you hate, so you stay in the crazy circle. And that's what people do. So we need to erase the walls of your circle right now and let you start by creating a new center, where you're now going to create your own circumference. And the very first principle is believe. None of these principles are new or revolutionary. There's a reason for that. They've existed. They just haven't existed in one place as a foundation of a new paradigm. But as of this moment, you've got to believe in yourself differently. I've spoken to you guys about how bizarre I think the world of marketing has become. And a lot of it has to do with social media, because it's so easy now to market and to be something you're not. Pretense is simple right now. You can create an imaginary presence in any social media forum. And you can kind of pretend to be the person that you think other people will be impressed by. And I've shared with you that I sat through workshops where the first part of the workshop is to create your story. So everybody's working on their story. The idea in this workshop is you start with some level of truth, but you embellish. You get creative. You choose a moment in your life and you make it bigger than it was. And then the second step, and this is what makes me laugh, is now you have to create authenticity. And it makes me laugh. How do you create authenticity out of fiction? They're polar opposites. Authenticity is truth. So if you've spun a story, there is no authenticity. You made it up. The sad thing is, I see the marketing. And it's working to make money for people. But that's not the paradigm you want to be in. You all have amazing truths. You just fail to recognize the strength of them, the power of them. And that's where your belief has to start. That you are unique, that you are better. Honestly, you are better than the rest of the industry. Why are you better? That's the question you have to answer, but you have to answer it by being real. And the answer for Tasso is not the same as for Velma, is not the same as for Tony, is not the same as for Jim Beatty, is not the same as for Patrick. But you've got to believe out of the gate that you have something that everyone else doesn't. Because otherwise you look in your circle and you go, well, yeah, I'm sort of like him and I'm sort of like her. No, you're not. I care about people. I have a passion for fitness. So does everyone else in the circle. So you've got to start by believing that what you bring is different. What you can do for people is more. You've got to believe that you haven't even come close to tapping into your own potential. And I'll tell you why initially it's a hard thing. Because you're grounded in your own belief. You've built those walls. You built everything in your circle. So it's difficult to change your belief if you've been living with a negative talk monster and a restrictive EEM. Because that's what holds you back. So in a moment of inspiration, you go, I deserve more, or I could open my own place, or I could have a better place, or I don't even need a place because I can be a celebrity, or I don't even need to be a celebrity. I can be a millionaire. And you have those thoughts. But if your EEM doesn't have support, it pulls you back. And it says things like, well, sure you can, but your clients suck. Well, sure you can, but the part of the world you live in won't support it. Well, sure you can, but you got some bad breaks in life. That's your EEM. And then the negative talk monster jumps right in. Goes, yeah, I mean, the truth is you like to pretend you're really good, but you suck. That's what holds you back. So you've got to literally start by changing your belief. We've done many exercises and workshops on belief changing, so I'm not going to spend time on the how right now. But that's a must. Because until you believe that you deserve to be outside of what I'm calling the circle, you're stuck. You've got to start by changing your belief. Now, I'm just curious. Can anybody here just share one example of a time, maybe a recent time, where you were really locked in because of a limiting belief, and when you changed the belief, your outcome changed? Can anybody here just think of one example, ideally related to your career? It doesn't have to be, but that's what I would love for the group here today. Where you were...
My prices.
Okay, go ahead. Spell it out for the people who don't know what you've gone through.
Well, I was encouraged to start raising my prices in accordance with what we agreed upon. And I said I wasn't going to do it until I was ready. And then I got ready.
Share the numbers, though, Tony, for anybody here who's just kind of listening, and just for a reference point.
Yeah, I'd gone from $75 a session. I had been hovering around there for some time, then up to 200, and then it was encouraged to go to 125. And the biggest part was changing it on the website or even telling anybody was being able to say it to myself. And to convince myself that, you know, this is at least what I'm worth for an hour of my time. And that was going to be very inexpensive, actually, for the person who was going to be investing in it.
And when did it change for you? I remember. I'm just curious if you do.
When did it change?
Yeah, because you made a statement one day, and that was like the moment where it changed. Tony changed.
I know I said it to the group.
What'd you say?
I don't know if there's anything else. I said it to the group, but I said I charge $125 a session.
That's it. You made the statement. You made the public statement. It wasn't, I'm going to try charging $125 and see what people do. I'm going to ask a few people. I'm going to only ask the ones who can afford it, right? It wasn't that anymore. That's what it was before. It became a definitive. It became a belief. I charge $125 a session. Boom. You guys know how powerful the I am is. That's it. Tony just created an identity statement based on new belief. And when you just create that belief, everything changes. Just quick math. If you do 20 sessions a week and you charge $125 a session, and I know everyone here is capable of doing more than that. I honestly do. I know everyone here is capable of charging more, and I know everyone here is capable of doing more. But just to pick some numbers, 20 sessions at $125 a week. Can anybody do that math?
$2,450.
$20 sessions at $125 each.
$3,000.
This is why you guys weren't math majors.
No, he has a calculator.
Oh, wait, it's $2,500.
It's $2,500, yeah.
Okay. So let's just say now that would be roughly $10,000 a month, right?
Yep.
12 months, taking 2 weeks off of vacation.
$125,000.
Okay, Tazza gave himself a $5,000 bonus, but that's good. 12 months times $10,000.
50 weeks. Come on, 50 weeks. 2 weeks off.
You took 2 weeks off. Okay, so somewhere around $120,000, right? But this is simple math, and I'm telling you that's more than double what the industry claims is good money for a personal trainer. That's for doing 20 sessions a week. That's a vacation for most of you. So by changing the belief, you change everything. So it has to start with a belief. And right now, all I'm asking you to believe is that you're more. You're more than you have been. You're capable of more than you've done. You have so much more to offer the world around you than the people who are calling themselves personal trainers. You have an ability that exceeds personal trainers. You have a desire to help people that exceeds personal trainers. And you have some very unique traits that make you greater. So number one is belief. And until you get that belief, I'm promising you, you're limited. Can anyone else just think of an example, like Tony just shared, where you changed the belief and it brought about a different outcome?
So I had the fear of talking in front of physicians or talking in physician language to patients, and now today, that's going back 2 years, and now my greatest allies are the physicians in the community, because from when I started doing the presentation 2.5 years ago and building more confidence and inviting them to the conversation, now where I had a fear of speaking in front of physicians, I feel more like
Peer,
yes.
So here's what I remember. There was a fear, what if they ask me something and I can't answer it, right? That was a fear. Because I remember we were learning to communicate about the imbalance between adrenal and thyroid. And because you're now speaking in a language that you hadn't spoken publicly before, now you have this fear that what if they ask you questions? And I said, they won't. They will not ask you those questions. You're creating something imaginary. But that's the EEM. It's holding you back. It's giving you support to stay in place. Yeah, well, now you know this, Tasso, but you're not smart enough. That's the EEM. Doctors are smart. And then negative talk supports it. It goes, yeah, well, everybody's going to ask you questions you can't answer, and you'll make a fool of yourself. But when you change the belief, that goes away. And by the way, if somebody asks you a question you can't answer, that doesn't even throw you now, right?
Right.
Right. There are three great words you follow with. I don't know. Nobody said you're supposed to know everything, but that's what supports the fear. So, Heather, if there's fear in you because you don't believe working with the magnets is going to elevate you the way it should, or Nathan, if there's fear in you because maybe you don't believe you could have the life in Hawaii that you're creating, it's belief that needs to change. If Velma has this grand idea that she's going to be traveling around the world doing these YouTube shows, but her EEM says, you could never really make that happen, and negative talk goes, are you kidding me? You can't even stay in one place long enough to decide if you like it or not. Then she's stuck. So you've got to change the belief. And as I said, you've heard it before. But if hearing it was enough, everybody would do it. So I'm saying now in this moment, elevate. Now in this moment, be willing to make a shift. Be willing to see that you don't belong in that circle. And that brings us to the second principle, be unreasonable. be unreasonable. Man, we are so limited by what people tell us we're supposed to be. We're so limited by what people think is reasonable. I'll share a moment with you, a moment in my life. I worked for Bally's. I was put in the Scandinavian Health Spa's corporate office in Akron, Ohio, and I would say I pretty much hated every single day. And the day that I decided to leave there, two things happened. One is I got into a slow motion accident on 77 where there was this very thin layer of snow and just cars were sliding into each other and there was nothing you could do. And I was standing out in my dress shoes on 77 with my toes like frostbitten. And I just said, I hate this. I want to go back to Florida. Later that day, I'm in the corporate office and I heard somebody say from the collections room, I don't care if you have to sell your black ass out on the street, you signed a contract and you're going to pay. That's what I heard. I was standing outside, the water cooler was outside the collections office, and I heard somebody say that. And I said, that's it. I can't work for this company anymore. And I literally went in and I quit. And I was working with the executives. I remember their names. And I walked in and I said, guys, I just can't do this anymore. I just don't want to be here anymore. I want to go back to Florida. And one of them said, well, what are you going to do? How are you going to get a job like this? You have a six-figure income, you have a car, you have an expense account, we pay your apartment, you get to travel everywhere. What are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to be a personal trainer. And he started laughing, and then the other started laughing. And I have to say, in that moment, I felt puny, but when I really look back on my life and I say, what were pivotal moments that drove me forward? That was one. That drive away from Akron, Ohio, back to Florida, all I could think about was that. They were laughing that I was going to be a successful personal trainer. And that really lies under my feet. It keeps me going. It keeps me putting one foot in front of the other. So while I'm saying none of us are really personal trainers as the world perceives them, in our heart we are. It's what we are. And that's a part of the dilemma, is because we consider ourselves part of that group, we think we're supposed to do what's reasonable. When you run a health club chain where the trainers make $12 a session, it's not reasonable to be an affluent personal trainer. It's not reasonable to make money as a personal trainer. So what do we learn? Be unreasonable. Throughout our lives, we've been told to be reasonable. And I think everybody here privately will acknowledge at times in your life you've been limited. You should have done more. You should have been more. You should have earned more. You should have helped more. And I'm saying now you can. So if somebody's telling you you can't, you have to ask the question, is that true? If you say I can earn $1 million this year and somebody says you can't, is it true? Or is it just somebody looking at the imaginary laws of what is reasonable? I'm telling you, your income can be limitless. The only reason you're earning anywhere close to what you earned last year and the year before is because you're stuck in the circle. You could earn whatever you believe you can earn. I'm not telling you belief is enough. I'm just saying without the belief, you're stuck. So we begin with the belief change and the willingness to be unreasonable. So that should be a prompt when somebody says, well, you can't. You go, why? Well, because trainers don't do that. Well, you can't. Why? Well, because of where you live. You know, be reasonable. You need something to fall back on. You can't take that risk. That should be the prompt that makes you go, then I have to. Then I have to. When I decided to leave that company, that was a full-blown decision. And that interaction of them trying to talk me into staying pushed me out the door faster because they were telling me that what I was thinking was unreasonable. Think clearly, Phil. What are you doing? You're walking away from a great life. Be reasonable. People at your age wish they had income like you. Be reasonable. It was only being unreasonable that led me to a place where I'm able to counsel people like you. Honestly. So the first, believe. The second, be unreasonable. Third, be better. I remember when I named this group, I used to run a roundtable, and I called it the PEAK Roundtable, and PEAK was an acronym for Personal Empowerment and Knowledge, PEAK. And then there came a time in my life that I didn't want to travel as much. And I was doing a lot of consulting for health club owners, and the truth is I didn't really feel that connected to the health club owners. I felt more connected to trainers. So I felt like I wanted to help trainers, but I couldn't charge them the way I charged health club owners. So the idea was, what if I could do it collectively? What if I could bring together a group and everyone pays a little instead of one club owner paying a lot? And then I started to ask the question, what is the thread that runs through everybody? What is the thread that I can use as a concept that helps me help people get fit, but also helps me help trainers grow? And really what it is the essence of desire, the essence of what drives human beings to move forward, the want to be better. Everyone, separating those who have a pathology of mindset, because if you have a pathology of mindset, you might not want to be better. You might not want to be alive. That's a pathology. But accepting those people, everyone wants to be better. It's what drives survival. We don't just want to exist. We want to be better. But here's the dilemma. Because we're supposed to be reasonable and because we don't have belief, we squash that desire. And we have thoughts like, if only I'd win the lottery. If only. Which really means we don't believe that we have the capability. We're saying, if only some miracle happened that I suddenly had this. And that type of thinking reflects an absence of belief. You've been squashed by everyone who told you to be reasonable. Stop thinking that way. It's ridiculous. So be better. And there's a concept that I share in the Be Better program called nudging the needle, where rather than pedal to the metal and going all out and saying, I'm going to do everything and be everything, a little at a time, just be better. We spoke about the financial impact of getting one new client a month. And we saw what it could turn into. It came from the model of Pizza Hut running a campaign where their goal was to just sell one more pizza per customer per store. So even if it's a little better, you have to be better from week to week, from month to month. I'm not asking for giant leaps because that's where you're constantly challenging your belief. But enough to look over your shoulder and say, I did that better. I made a little more. I took it farther. I helped that client in a different way. I got the client I never thought I could. I got the deal at the corporation that I really never would have had the balls to ask for. The fourth principle of the new paradigm, be guided. Be guided. Now, what does that mean? Who guides you? I take this responsibility very seriously. I do. I never want to steer anybody toward a misstep. I've invested countless, endless hours in learning about human psychology, influence, human betterment, fitness, mindset, neuroplasticity, because my life's purpose and pursuit has been helping people be better. So I don't take that lightly. And when I see that people sign up for a webinar that teaches them to make money as a coach, it offends me. It offends me. Somebody, I'm sure today, there are at least 65 webinars being promoted on Facebook, probably 650 webinars being promoted on Facebook that are saying something like, make money coaching people. So now people attend a webinar The person conducting the webinar is making money because these people are attending a webinar. And what the person making the money is teaching them to do is exactly what he's doing. Get people to come to a webinar because you can coach them. Now, a part of the webinar is you got to figure out what you're good at. So all of a sudden, because somebody figures out what they're good at, they are entitled to now be a coach. It's the world we live in. But what I'm saying to you is I've invested the better part of 35 years of being a grown-up in learning how to do this. I don't take this lightly. So I appreciate that you're allowing me to guide you at some level. But I'm also asking you to recognize your guidance that comes from inside or above, and I'll talk more about that. It's good to have a mentor. It's good to have somebody to direct you, to steer you. But your greatest guidance will come from your intuition, from your gut, from your inner voice. Now, this is the difficult part. Distinguishing your inner voice, your inner guide, from the negative talk monster. They're not the same. They're not the same. There are certain exercises that I recommend in the 21-Day Metabolic Reboot. And although I don't spend much time talking about this, they put people in touch with their true intuition. And one of them is the gratitude journal. Because when you're in a state of gratitude, negative voice cannot come in. I will also tell you that I have met people who are very committed to becoming Buddhists. Becoming Buddhists. They take on meditation. And the goal becomes to achieve the state of nirvana, where they can just sit on a mountain and want for nothing. I can't fault them. If that's truly what they want, I just don't know if it is. I think what they're trying to do is quiet human desire because it's scary. It's scary to be human. It's intimidating to be human. And if you can truly get to a state of silence, there's no pressure anymore. But we know what drives us to be better is pressure. We know that what allows us to become more muscular or get better at running or improve VO2 max or strengthen bone density is stress. Not excessive stress. We also know what happens when the stress load exceeds recovery. But I don't know that that's truly the path for humans is to find nirvana sitting on the mountain. I think it's a pursuit of those who don't want to live the human experience, to get to a place where they can be in gratitude for nothing. And honestly, it's really a beautiful idea that you could have nothing and have gratitude. But what if you can have gratitude as you're helping people better their lives? So remember what I said. You cannot be in a state of gratitude and converse with the negative talk monster. It's not possible. If you're going to set your GPS for east and west at the same time, you have a flawed GPS. It can't do it. You can only set your GPS on one point. You can set it for another point along the way, but ultimately, it's going to give you directions to the destination you set. So when you are in a state of gratitude for something you've done or something you own or something you possess or something you're connected to, you cannot allow negative talk to come in. It can't. There's no room. It doesn't live in that world. So when you really start to do this exercise of developing a gratitude journal and spending 5 minutes, 10 minutes a night before bed in a state of gratitude, not silence, but literally writing down what you're thankful for, you start to access your intuition. Not immediately, but you're pushing negative talk out of the way. You begin to connect cleanly to the prefrontal cortex. You allow new possibility thoughts to come in. We're fitness trainers. We want to know exercise routines. We want to know specific intervals we can do. We want to know protocols. We don't want to sit with a notebook. Well, that would be true of the personal trainers who are in the circle. But I'm telling you, here's how you get out of that circle. Be guided. It's not the gratitude itself. If you think of the gratitude experience as cleansing, as getting rid of negative talk, then you get in touch with your intuition. You start to see the difference between what you really desire, what you really want, and what your EEM is telling you is reasonable. I think prayer is really important. I'm not one to preach on religion, but I can speak of the virtues of prayer. I've seen miracles from prayer. And for many years, I encouraged people who wanted to understand this to read Joseph Murphy's The Subconscious Mind, because it takes a lot of the mystery out of prayer. You start to understand subconsciously how it can allow us to connect with thoughts and how there is a unified field and how we are so much more than just the physical and how prayerful thoughts can bring about neurological changes, and those neurological changes can bring about different actions and different outcomes. So whether or not you're religious, I think prayer is really important. Why? Because it puts you in touch with your true intuition. And whether or not you think it's okay to pray for material things or things you want, I think if you pray for clarity, I think if you pray to be in touch with your true desire, you just gain greater access. So I'm not asking anybody to be religious. I'm just telling you that when you spend time alone with your inner voice, you are guided. Too many personal trainers are guided within the circle by the insane parade of personal trainers marching around the same circle complaining. They should not be your guide. So if you respect me at any level as your guide and mentor, if I'm telling you this is important and you have a far greater voice than mine within you, I'm just telling you to access it regularly every single day, because it'll get you unstuck. I'll review the first four. Believe. Be unreasonable. Be better. Be guided. That takes us to number five. Be centered. I said earlier, you are the center. And as the center, you create the circumference. You've created everything in your life. If you're inclined to say, no, I haven't, Phil, you don't understand, then that's your EEM and that's your lack of belief. It's a hard thing to be that accountable, to go, I have created everything in my life. But when you get that, you develop a power. Because if you're willing to acknowledge that you created even the garbage in your life, then you start to realize that you're a creator. And you start to realize that you can recreate, but you're going to recreate from the center. You're going to recreate from where you are. So if you want to create something different, you've got to get out of the circle and create a new one. So you got to move. This is where the creative tension line becomes really valuable. There's a reason the diagram puts you in a circle, and then you move out of it. You step out of the circle along the line towards your future memory. You're creating a new center. By moving along that line, you're moving your center, and then you build a whole new circle around yourself. Now, I'm going to share a concept that really came to me and has really served me in viewing the medical field and people within the medical field and certain health practitioners that I don't feel are 100% ethical. I see their movement. I see the circle they create. And they're not in the center. I think really what we all want ultimately is significance. That's what we want. So if I'm at a conference and there are doctors there and I go, hey guys, why are we here? They'll say something like, to improve our lives or to change the world, which would be really noble. And ultimately I go, I don't really believe that's why you're here. I believe they're there because they want to find significance. And this is why somebody graduates college and takes the MCATs and they get accepted to a medical school and they study hard and they stay up nights studying and they become caffeine addicted because if they don't study, they're not going to pass. And they do an internship and they do a residency because they know that if they're able to really devote their lives to this noble mission of medicine and help people, they will be rewarded. But to help people is really important. You talk to a medical student, yeah, they have this idea they're going to make a lot of money, but you don't go through that level of sacrifice unless you really want to be significant. And then they come out of school and they start to create their own circumference. So they may go into private practice and they hire a staff, they rent an office, they create a customer flow, consumers come in. They have patients, they decide what insurance they accept, what's reasonable for them, and now the insurance companies drive traffic, and ultimately they get to spend a whopping 6 or 7 minutes with every patient, and it's not really what they thought they would do, but they get caught up. And they're making money, but then they reach a point where they go, I'm overworked, I'm paying too much for malpractice insurance. I have a whole staff that I don't even like. I have far less free time than I want. I've got to change something. And now they're no longer going after significance. Now they start to question whether they're getting what they deserve. And they shift a little bit. And they move in the circle. And they start to recognize the injustice. Patients don't listen to my advice. All they want is the pill. That's negative talk. That's what they start to do. And at that point, they decide they don't deserve to be working this hard. After all, they've gone to medical school. They've taken all the tests. They passed the exams. They want to figure out now how to make more money and work less. So now it's not about significance anymore. It's about gratification. Why did they shift? Because they never found significance. Because the paradigm doesn't support it. And the same is true for you guys. The personal training paradigm doesn't support your significance. So you compromise. Yeah, I'm not making the money I wanted, but at least I'm helping people. Are you? Are you helping people at the level you can? Or is that just rationalizing? So when you really re-examine what will make you feel significant, man, personal reward has to be a part of it. The thank yous have to be a part of it, but so too does what you earn. You need to feel recognized and appreciated, not just because someone says thank you. You've all had the feeling where you help a client and they change their life and then they go do something else like CrossFit and then they start, you see them like giving a testimonial to the CrossFit and you go, what? I spent 3 years helping this person. Where's the recognition of me? Because you never got the significance. That becomes important to you. So you've got to reestablish your center. And what I came to recognize is that many health practitioners, in reevaluating where they are, look at the field they're in and they become critical of it. They go, oh, you know what? It's the insurance companies, the drug companies, I'm going to stop behaving this way. I really want to heal people. And maybe they learn some things. Maybe they learn acupuncture. Maybe they study Chinese medicine. And they get to a place that they have one patient that they really heal. Maybe they learn some kind of emotional release. And the mainstream of medicine thinks they're out there. They're like, oh, well, you couldn't handle regular medicine. But in their mind, no, they're becoming healers because they want to feel significant. They're going back to what they really wanted because they're not getting it from their life. But that's when it goes wrong. Because they really heal one person or two people. And they make a major mistake. They believe they did it. They believe they were the healer. They don't realize healing is innate. The body heals itself. The truth is they didn't heal anyone. They were the vessel for delivering the energy or the knowledge or the information. They didn't actually heal anyone. God or the universe or nature, that's what healed them. They cleared the way. That's all they did. But now they start to believe that they are a healer. And guess what happens? They don't feel significant. They go, oh, this isn't fair because no insurance companies don't recognize me now. The medical field doesn't recognize me. I'm not making enough money. I can't possibly charge enough. I'm spending too much time with patients. They go the totally opposite direction. And they sign up for a program. They sign up for a program where they learn how to make money. And the program teaches them today, you can make money selling cannabis. I'm not lying. This is what's happening. So they flock to the cannabis conventions, and they meet the growers, and they meet the distributors, and they're selling CBD oil, and they're private labeling. And now they're calling themselves healers, and they move right past doing what they did that was miraculous. And they become liars, not on purpose. They don't realize they're liars, but that's what they become. And we have an entire fringe of our industry calling themselves healers, and they are really just liars. So when I say be centered, I came up with a compass. And if we use the metaphor of a compass, to the north would be the collective. Stay with me, you'll understand. Some of you have heard this before. To the south would be the individual or the self-ego. So we have a spectrum. One end of the spectrum is the collective. The other end is the individual, the self-ego. Somebody who is too caught up in the collective is somebody who, in essence, would be in a cult. They give up their own self-worth. They give up their own identity. They get so caught up in a system, a belief system, a culture, that no longer are they an individual. They're just a part of something bigger. And if they die, the something bigger goes on. They're a cell in an organism. There is no significance. Why do they do it? Because they don't have to think. Honestly, it takes the pressure off. And when you wonder why people go into cults, that's why. So clearly it is unhealthy to be too far north. So I don't love the concept of pursuing your true north. I think you got to pursue the center. But the other end of that spectrum, south, would be all about you. And I gave you the example. When somebody learns science and an art and a practice and they apply it and they see an outcome and now they believe it's them. I did it. I'm the miracle. I'm the power. And it becomes ego. So where do you want to be? Right in the middle. You want to be part of something. You want to be part of a collective. You want this collective built into your circle, but you don't want it to be the circle. And you want to have self-dignity and self-respect and self-worth and know what you've achieved. But you also have to know it's not all you. You want to be in the center. Now if we look at the East and the West. To the east would be the parasite. To the west would be the empath. The parasite survives by feeding off of others. So if you're going to make $500,000 this year selling cannabis to people who don't need it, I'm not saying there's not value in it. I'm just saying I see the movement. And I'm using that as an example. It doesn't have to be cannabis. It's just making money at the expense of people. It's bringing somebody in for a free consultation and selling them $4,000 worth of supplements because that's how you make your money. And if you call them nutraceuticals and you charge more because they're somehow medical, it's a lot of bullshit. They're supplements. That's what they are. So if that's how you make your money, then you've become the parasite. But on the other end is the empath. And the empath gives so much that they lose life force. And that's a horrible place to be. And I find many personal trainers are empaths. Being an altruist is one thing. Being an empathetic altruist who gives too much of yourself, it's a death sentence. It's the death of your career. It's the death of your significance. Can you live many years that way? Sure. Can you put up nice posts on Facebook that make you seem as if you're successful? Sure. But is it healthy? No. So you need to be in the center. And the beauty of this is, if you realize what you're seeking is significance, then you now have the opportunity to move your center and build a circle around it. Not fully on the collective, not fully on the individual, not as a parasite and not as an empath. Right in the middle, where you're helping people and getting paid as you deserve. This is a paradigm that will change your life. Seven principles. Believe. Be unreasonable. Be better. Be guided. Be centered. Number 6 out of 7, be protected. Every one of us has had the client who drains us. Every one of us has had that client multiplied. You dread when that client is coming or going to their house. You dread it. But you do it. Why? For the money. You need it. Because if you're charging $75 and you don't see that client, then that's 3 sessions a week, $225 a week out of your pocket. You need to do it. It's a massive mistake. They're feeding off of you. They're sucking your life force. So for those of you who are still making the mistake, stop. We try to figure out different ways. We try to come up with different strategies. We go, this time I'm going to go there and I'm going to play some upbeat music and I'm going to start telling her about my weekend so she can't tell me about her misery. But it doesn't matter. She'll still get to you. She'll go, I hate that song. Can you lower the music? I need to tell you something. Once somebody becomes that to you, it's hard to close the gate. I suggest you remove them from your life. And if you're worried about the money, it costs you more to keep them. It's hard to believe in the moment, but I'm promising you, you will find a better client who will likely pay you more, who will be happy. Now, this doesn't only apply to clients. I've had business partners who sucked the life out of me. They were great lessons. I've had women that I've dated suck the life out of me. And you ask yourself, why did I stay in it? Truth is, didn't know better. Everything else that I would come up with is a rational lie. The truth is, I didn't know better. When somebody starts to rob you of your energy, get away. Sometimes? Nope, always. Be protected. Insulate yourself. And I wanted to share an experience I had 2 days ago. Actually, it was Monday, so more than 2 days ago. This week zipped by. I had an appointment to see a woman to do an assessment, and I was using the Quantum Infinity or the Genius tool. The people in Platinum know what that is. The other people, I'll say it's a biofeedback tool that gives you amazing insight. Without touching somebody, just reading off of their energy, you can identify what's going on in their emotions and in their cells. So it's really amazing. And one of the things that came up for this woman was that her physical pain and her physical issues were related to emotion. And Tammy Tasso, I don't know if you've seen this before, but the ones that came up very high were really heavy emotions. Dread and terror were the top two. And there were more. Horror. Now, I'm not that experienced in going through that type of outcome with somebody. I'm really good with physical stuff. I'm really good at reviewing labs. But I'm not really experienced in talking to people about emotions they haven't shared with me. So I started to read off some of what was coming up. And I said, does this mean anything to you? Because very high on the list is terror and dread and horror and disappointment. And then I saw in an instant her physiology was changing. Now I was standing, she was sitting. She literally flew out of the chair. I mean, like somebody lit a fire under her, grabbed me, squeezing like a sad little girl would hug her dad. I mean, it was the grip that she had on me. I really felt, A, she had no right to be in that space. I didn't expect it. But B, I didn't know how to handle it. She was squeezing me so tight. Her head is on my shoulder. There's very little body movement, but I feel the wet coming through the shoulder of my shirt. That's how much tears were coming out of her eyes. And really, it felt like a very long time. I didn't know how to get her off. And yeah, I felt empathetic, but it was inappropriate. So eventually, I literally started to shuffle my feet back toward her chair, and I put my arms around her and like guided her back into the chair, like leaned forward so she's sitting, and I almost had to pry her fingers off me. And needless to say, the rest of the session was really awkward. Never had that happen to me before. I deal with emotions when it's controlled. I know how to take somebody through Navaka and get them into that, you know, that sad state and then rescue them. I had no reference for this. And Tammy, I don't know if you've ever had this, but it took me by surprise. Have you?
No, I never had anybody hug me like that.
Did you ever, though, have like an emotional response that you didn't expect because you tapped into something?
Yes, the tears part.
Yeah, so this was extreme. But this is what got to me. After I left that session, I couldn't shake the heaviness. I felt like I couldn't let it go. And I didn't know what to do with it. I felt like I needed some kind, like somebody needed to extract this from me. And I don't know if anybody here can relate to this. I couldn't. Like if somebody described this to me prior to that, I wouldn't know what they mean. But I felt heavy emotion. I felt like I needed to cry and there was nothing for me to cry about. And then later that night, I was talking to somebody and I was describing it. And I go, you know what? This isn't mine. Like I'm carrying emotion that isn't mine. And with that, it literally went away. I mean, like in a moment. I just literally declared, and not on purpose, but this isn't mine. Like she somehow took her emotion and it went into me. Now I know that sounds bizarre, but it reinforced what I'm saying is you need to protect yourself. And honestly, since that, I've done a few consultations. I position myself differently. I sit. I have a barrier between us. Honestly, I have something between us. I just don't want access. Not that they're going to hug me like that, but I realize I was unguarded. So it reinforces what I'm talking about. When you're dealing with people's lives and emotions, man, you got to be protected. So be protected. Don't let people into your circle that will drain you. They don't belong there. Has anybody had, or does anybody actually have that client who every time you leave the session, you go, oh, man, I need a nap. I need to meditate. Has anybody had that ever?
This is Troy.
Yeah.
I have.
Go ahead. I heard two people talking. I don't know who was talking first, so just go.
No, Troy.
Troy, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, definitely I have. And in the end, I ended up firing the client because it was just too much drain on me.
Yeah, it's self-preservation at a certain point, right?
Absolutely.
And by the way, those clients never leave on their own. You've really got to fire them. I mean, the way you describe it is true because they're getting something from you. They're enjoying putting their energy on you. They don't even know consciously they're doing it, but it's something, it's like a commiseration, like share this with me. And then you leave with that heaviness and you go, what? It's not mine. And I want you to recognize that. Who else was going to say something? Thank you, Troy.
That was me.
Go ahead.
I got the same thing. And you know, that's, I found that the essential oils, I use white angelic at night a lot of times.
Oh, wait, but have you had that when you did a Genius or a Quantum Infinity on somebody? Did you get a reaction,
yeah,
like an emotional
really.
Reaction?
Actually, when I see that, when I do that, I don't share it with them at that point.
I never will again. I'm telling you, there's a lesson I learned.
Completely out of the emotion panel. I think Tammy does the same thing. Maybe she's a little more progressed now, but I thought Tammy said what I just don't even go. I'm not prepared for that. So I look at it. I'm aware of it for my own self-knowledge, and then I move on to, like, today's risk or something like that.
Yeah. So, you know, I just think it's a very real and elegant example just from my own life recently because we can carry other people's energy. So you've got to be protected. You can't let people rob you of that life force, you know, that up inspiration, motivation that's bringing you forward to every single client. When somebody robs that from you, they're taking your power. So like Troy said, fire those clients. And as Tasso just said, have boundaries. Because I just really developed one for myself. And the last one, the seventh one, is the one some of you are probably least likely to understand. But it's be whole, W-H-O-L-E. I won't share the story of my junior high school assistant principal, Mr. Contrada, because I've shared it many times and some of you have probably heard it more than once. But he taught me the word integrity. And it wasn't a fun lesson for me. It was after I set the wall of the classroom on fire. So it wasn't like I was sitting there going, yes, Mr. Contrada, teach me. It was a punishment. But he taught me the word integrity, and he said to me, Phil, you are an integer. You are an integer, potentially, but you're not living as one. You're living as a fraction. I just sat and looked at him, and he goes, because you are fragmented. Because you have the ability to be a leader. He said, I see how kids follow you. But when you behave like a fraction, they don't know what they're getting. And you do stupid things, and they follow you, and they laugh, and you're an entertainer, and you're doing stupid things. And if you continue to do those stupid things, you'll wind up in jail or worse. But inside, you can be an integer, which is a whole number, a whole. Be whole. An integer comes from the root integrity. It means you are whole. People can rely on you. Because if you're a fraction, they don't know what they're going to get. Are they going to get the idiot Phil or the wise Phil? The leader who will lead them well or the leader who will lead them into the dean's office? This is in middle school, junior high school. So you will either lead people into jail with you, or you will lead people somewhere great. And you have to decide, are you going to be a fraction or an integer? And that lesson didn't surface in my life for years, but then I got it. Integrity means be whole. It wasn't until I started to meet other people and see that they didn't have integrity, I started to understand. So be whole. But I'm going to add to it. I'm going to say be whole above, below, and within. What do I mean by that? When we talk about the inner voice, when we talk about the inner guide, when we talk about the voice that can help steer you correctly, your intuition, we can think of that at some level as your higher self, something above, something that is not really in the vessel of the body, but some greater wisdom that's coming from above. And when you align with that, you have integrity. So whatever walks through this earth as you're guided from above needs to be aligned. So above, below, and within. And when I say within, realize that your body is the miracle that you know it is. And we're in a world where we are responsible for helping other people learn how to make their bodies work in line with their own creation. So I think we have to value that every day. I'm not saying live a Spartan lifestyle. I'm not saying never eat gluten. I'm not saying never eat ice cream. I'm just saying be in alignment with your inner voice, your behavior, your actions, and the way you take care of your body. I've spent a lot of years in this field of fitness. I've known a lot of personal trainers who are competitive bodybuilders. I've known a lot of competitive bodybuilders who become personal trainers. I've seen them train hard, 4 hours a day in the gym. I've seen them measure out their anabolic steroids, not in milligrams, but in grams. I've seen them use insulin and growth hormone and prostaglandins. I've seen them inject fats into their muscles, synthol. And then they personal train people and talk to them about health and building up their bodies healthfully. That's not integrity. That's not integrity. That's the field we're in. By the way, if you're a competitive bodybuilder and you're using whatever science is required to allow you to win at a pro level, I'm not saying don't train people. If you train people in bodybuilding, then be honest. I'm just saying that would be integrity. If you say to your clients, I wouldn't look this way. I wouldn't look this way unless I did 600 milligrams of testosterone cypionate and 400 milligrams of decadurabolin, and at least that's integrity. Right or wrong is not up to me. But we're in a field where there's a lot of pretense. And as you start to look around you, both in the world of fitness and in the world of medicine, you're going to find many people are not in their center. To me, this is a perfect paradigm. This is a formula for betterment. This can change everything. And I wanted to share it with you. I'll open it up to any thoughts, any comments, any questions, any comments on a specific principle or just the overriding thought, good, bad, and different. I'm open to anything. We have the Avengers and the Guardians of the Galaxy in the same room here, so anything you want to share is okay. I don't want you to feel reserved because you don't know everybody here.
Phil?
Mm-hmm.
Gary here.
Hello, Gary.
Hi.
Gary from New Jersey.
Gary from New Jersey. You're from New York, aren't you?
Originally, yes.
Oh. I was wondering about you when you were mentioning prayer.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I've never been a religious person.
Nor have I.
But I do believe that that's part of something that's missing in me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just wondering, like, as far as, like, I don't even know how to pray. I don't even know how to say prayer. What do you mean? Just like maybe speak to God in whatever way you believe in it? Is that what you're referencing?
That would be prayer, yes.
Okay. I was just curious about exactly what you meant about that.
You know, Gary, if you go through the day one materials from my metabolic reboot.
Okay.
I encourage people to pray, not in a religious way, and I give them two options. One option is to pray to a greater force if that's what they believe in. The other option is just purely to extend thanks. So it doesn't have to be religious.
Okay.
So at a baseline level, it is simply sending your thoughts to what some may call the universe, to the heavens, to the greater being, to whatever it is that you believe brings you the good in life. And it starts with just being thankful. And really, that opens up a line of communication. Now, where it goes from there, I can't tell you. There are many people who pray to Jesus Christ. There are many people who pray to God Almighty. There are many people who believe in their own faith, whether it's Hindu or Buddhism. I really don't think it matters. You know, the way that I think of it is I have an Android phone. My daughter has an iPhone. We can't use the same charger, but we both access the same electricity. So I feel like whatever path you take, if you just have the connection to something greater, if you realize that there is more than that we recognize with our five senses and you make that connection, it's a start. And where that goes, you have to just kind of let it take its course. And that's the best I could do in a forum like this. If you want to speak separately, we certainly can. I might point you in some directions. But I think not the religious part, but the connection with something greater gives you a sense that you're not in this alone and you don't have to follow the circle and you find your own guidance and you find your own inner voice. So thank you for being courageous enough to bring that up. Anyone else? Thoughts, comments on anything, even if it's just a response for Gary?
Hey, Phil.
Yes.
So the guys in our group are familiar with my background and my youth ministry and stuff, but maybe something that will help Gary to his prayer rule, his self thing is, When I start to teach youth to pray, I give them an acronym, which I think can become applicable in a different sense than what I use it with them. And the acronym PRAY is, you know, praise the things that were good in your life today. Number one, that's the P. The R is, for when I teach, is repent, you know, what can I do better? So for Gary, it'd be review what I could do better. You know, the third thing, the A, is ask. Ask for others what you would like to do or can do. And then ask for yourself what you want. I think that might be a nice tie-in that doesn't have a religious core connected to it, but gives him a prayer rule, for lack of a better term, that helps him to move forward in getting it as an action for himself.
Very good. And Gary, this call is recorded, so you can go back and listen to that if you want to write that down. But very good. Thank
great.
You.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Thank you.
Yep. Anyone else, any thoughts on anything other than the prayer that we reviewed today? Do you see it valuable? Do you see it applicable? Is it resonating with you? Is it like, ah, same old stuff, I've heard a million times? Give me some honesty.
Well, it's very interesting, this is exactly where I was going to go with that, to hear it and hear it ad nauseum from other places and to hear it in this kind of forum from you and to how I receive it now being in a different place when I heard it initially.
And when you say it, you mean the entirety of the paradigm or you mean bits and pieces that you're hearing from different sources?
Bits and pieces, but collectively.
Good. Tammy, any thoughts? Heather, Nathan? Patrick? Troy?
So, Phil.
Yes.
So here's the inner battle that keeps arising for me since the conversation you and I had several weeks ago. And it runs consistent in this. So for people who don't know, you know, I'm an old school knowledge training kind of guy, right? And when I look back and look at what my roots and what I want to do and what I think is unique about me, this model of high intensity training is what is at my roots. And I know you've told me that's outdated, it had its time, you know, we move into it. But I find that what I've evolved to is that still is the core of who I am, but I've been able to add the components of the Alive program that are appropriate to it, because the science, whether you look at the science, if you train the way we train, the science still works and still thinks. So, you know, I have this drive with him. It says, you know, okay, Phil is really pushing me that I'm old school, but then I understand where my unreasonable part is, that I see how this applies for me and what it is, which, again, it's back to Tammy trains different than I do, Velma trains different, Tony trains different than I do. So, you know, at times I feel like I for lack of a better term, disappoint, because I'm so hard to move off of that. And it comes in the form of people who I have in the reboot are always coming to me and saying, well, you know, Phil talks like you don't need machines. I said, no, don't misconstrue Phil. The intent of the Alive program is different than what the intent of what I do for you is. And that's why the two marry together very well.
So, well, hold on. Let me just add something, because what you just articulated, Tasso, is a belief of mine. I believe you don't need machines.
Okay. I mean, and fair enough. I mean, I believe I can work people out without machines too, Phil, but the business model I've chosen is one that does include them, and I have my reasons for why.
Well, Tasso, I owned health clubs where we had 87 different machines,
yeah.
But I still have the belief you don't need machines.
Right.
Now, if you ask me the question, can machines help people get to an outcome faster? Yeah. If you ask Phil, do you use machines when you go to the gym? Yeah. So I don't think that you have to lock in. I think that as a professional, the machines are a tool. I think the Nautilus principles are a learning that served you. But I think that all those years ago, when Nautilus came out, it was the collective. It was the cult. It was, this is the way. And for a period of time, people followed that. And it was that we've come out with this dynamic variable resistance, and this is all you need, and 8 to 12 repetitions. And by the way, here's Casey Viator and Mike Mentzer and Ray Mentzer, and everybody's like, oh, this must really work. But over time, people drifted away from that. Or they said, you know what? I had the old universal machine, and that worked just fine. Or they said, this world of functional training has given me greater endurance. Or the Nautilus training over the years has injured my joints. So it becomes a tool and a good tool. And it becomes an option and a good option. So I don't think you're as stuck as you're telling yourself you are. I think it's a belief that you need to let go of. I think you have a little bit of an all or nothing mentality, because when you said, Phil believes we don't need machines, and you said, whoa, that's not what it is. But that doesn't mean I don't see the value in machines. So it's not an all or nothing. I believe we don't need treadmills. Honestly, I believe we don't need jump ropes. We don't need elastic tubing. We don't need stability balls. I think when you have a true fitness professional, they can figure out, based on whatever is at their disposal, how we can change your body, how we can use an adaptive stimulus to make you better. So I think you're stuck in this, it has to be or it has to not be. And I think when you start to believe more of yourself, that the value isn't in the Nautilus and the value isn't in the Alive program, the value is in Tasso. That's the belief. Then Tasso will tell you when the Nautilus principles are right for you. And Tasso will tell you when your body has adapted to that and we need to make a change.
But my point, Phil, is where it sticks me is as I work to develop the I am, you know, the I am statements for myself. Because, you know, I come to that bridge where I realize I've evolved beyond that. I mean, the program is beyond that. And I understand the components that have been brought into my circle to make me better. But there still is, at the core belief system, there is still a recognition of these principles have helped me get to where I am. and that's part of my uniqueness. Does that make sense, or is that my sort of stumbling block?
It's your self-imposed stumbling block.
Okay.
Can I say something?
Let me say one more thing, and I'll let you say something. It's like if I learn to drive driving a stick, and then I choose to drive an automatic. I learned to drive driving a stick. That doesn't mean I'm locked into that. And someday I might want to get a race car and drive a stick again, so I have control. So because it was the core of what you build your business on doesn't mean it's limiting you, and somehow you're seeing it as a limitation. And I'm saying if Tasso is the master, if Tasso is Yoda, then if Yoda says Nautilus you'll use, then Nautilus you'll use. But if Tasso says alive 13 weeks beginning now, then you do that. And if Tasso says today, functional 6, then you'll do that. So that makes Tasso even more of a master because he has all of these tools at his disposal, and he can look at you and understand you and talk to you and decide what is the best thing for you with certainty. So there's no conflict other than in your own belief system. Go ahead, Tony.
Well, it's similar to what you said. It's that the thinking that brought you to a problem, issue, a challenge is not the same thinking that you need to utilize to get out of it. Which means that you have, again, you being Yoda. I dubbed you Yoda, right? I believe I'm the one who named you Yoda.
Yep, you're the one that did that.
Yeah. So if I'm looking to you for that, I am going to rely on your experience, your knowledge, and your wisdom, and you have all this stuff at your disposal. So like Bruce Lee said, when water is poured into a vase, it takes on the shape of a vase. It's poured into a bucket, it becomes a bucket. It's poured into a glass, it becomes a glass. So you are the one who is objectively able to see that. So all these things are just, like Phil said, they're just tools that you have at your disposal. And you're not limited by them, you're empowered by them, because it's not just the tool, you're the artisan. You know which tool is necessary under which condition.
Right.
Tasso, you know, listen back to this, especially this part, and then go back to what I said about belief. Because the problem isn't Nautilus. The problem isn't what you started with. The problem is your belief that there's a conflict. There isn't. It's self-imposed. You're making it. It doesn't exist.
Okay.
It exists for you only because you're acknowledging that you're somehow stuck in something. And the only reason you're stuck in it is because you have this belief. So listen back to this standing outside your own circle, and I have a feeling everything's going to change.
Right.
Change it will.
Change it will. By the way, Tony, I think on that call where we were looking at the avatars, you nailed it with Yoda. It was perfect. So, yeah.
He kind of looks like Yoda, too.
Hey, listen, I told my girlfriend to shut up. I was no Yoda, and I knew everything. I hit in the mouth.
All right, one final thought from anybody. An important one, a frivolous one, whatever you got.
I would say this was a great call. Hit me at the exact perfect time of what I needed. Thank you, Phil.
Beautiful way to wrap it up. I appreciate that. So nice having the Avengers together with the Guardians of the Galaxy. If you haven't seen Avengers, see it. Until we speak again, be better, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Phil.